The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties, and a lot of those cities, believe it or not, have properties for under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first property out of state in the next 4 months, I encourage you to apply to my out-of-state coaching program. I purchased properties out of state, and it's absolutely changed my life completely. The same is possible for you too. You simply need the right information. That's all it takes. My program will provide you the hands-on support and a step-by-step process to buy that first property within 4 months. So go to outofstatemoney.com to apply today. Again, outofstatemoney.com to apply today. And I look forward to talking to you soon.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
In 2019, I was so excited to buy my first property. I found a three-bedroom, single-family home with plenty of yard space that I knew would be attractive to renters in the area. It was just 5 minutes from downtown. I got it rented and eventually the HVAC system went out. At that time, I quickly realized just how important insurance was. Many first-time rental property owners don't anticipate common issues. It's not a matter of if, but when an issue will come up. If you're a rental property owner, you need good insurance so you're prepared to protect your investment. Steadily's coverage is low cost and they pride themselves on providing excellent service. Visit steadily.com for a free quote today. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 118. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platforms you're listening to this on. Also, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us go up in the rankings and reach more people. You'll also get a shout out on the show if you leave a 5-star rating and review. So I look forward to hearing from you soon. We have an amazing class coming up in the Bread Investing community on May 25th. Kendra Barnes is going to talk about travel nurses and that short-term rental strategy. It's a strategy that not many people are talking about, but in some cases it can be a lot easier than Airbnb and other short-term rental strategies. So you definitely want to make sure that you join the Bread Investing community so you can be part of that class. And all you have to do is join the Bread Investing community for $1 for your first week. If you like it, feel free to stay on and you can be part of that session. So I look forward to seeing you there. This episode was fire. I really, really enjoyed it. And I know you all will enjoy it too. So without further ado, let's get into it. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited about this episode. Here with me, I have Alex Coleman out of Baltimore. Yeah. Alex, appreciate you coming on the show.
Sure. I appreciate you having me, man. You know, like I was telling you, I was on Apple looking for podcasts, real estate. You popped up and I started listening. I was like, man, this is cool, you know, because a lot of what you do is centered around people who are getting going, you know, like doing their first few deals. And I just think that that's dope, man. I love it.
Definitely. Definitely. Appreciate your support and appreciate you hitting me up about the show. And, you know, sometimes I just put stuff out and you hope people listen. So each messages like that mean a lot to me. And I'm glad, you know, we could turn it into an interview. So
yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Alex, let's get right into it. How did you get into real estate? Like, what was it about real estate where you're like, you know what, you know, I want to try this out and see what I can do?
Yeah. So my story is probably a little different from most. It was just random. I think I was maybe like 17, 18. A friend of mine is like, take a ride with me. He's like, oh, take a ride with me. I'm like, cool. So he takes me to this house. I'll never forget, over on the west side of Baltimore. We like go in through the basement and come upstairs. And it was like the most beautiful house I'd ever seen. It was like a row home. And I'm just looking around. It's like hardwood floors, like renovated. And it's just in the middle of this area where you would never think this house exists. And it was my first time really seeing something like that. And I was like, man, I want to learn how to do this. And I knew from that moment that it was something that I wanted to do. And my friend who I'm mentioning, he's still in construction, but, you know, he was getting into construction back then. So the guy who was doing that property and him, they started working together. They hired me as like their day laborer while they were doing this renovation project. And I was just there, like, you know, not necessarily learning, but just like there, like moving things around, move the drywall here, keep the house clean, go get lunch, those kind of things. And I did that through a whole renovation, and I was kind of like, all right, this is kind of, you know, the direction I want to go into.
Definitely. Definitely. So, one thing you mentioned is that you had an interest, you knew somebody and you started doing some work, and, a lot of people wouldn't be willing to do that. And so, you know, why did you choose to do that? Was it because you wanted to get around real estate and see what it's about? Like, what was it? Why did you take that opportunity?
So I think the good thing about not having many options is that you don't really know any other way but to go through it the way that's presented to you. So at that time, I didn't know anybody in real estate. So it's not like I had like this option, that option, like a million different things and ways I could learn. It was just like, this is a house that you see that you want to know how to do, and this is how you do it. You know, even like when I started to branch off, and I was kind of like, after working for them, I was like, man, I hate this. Like, you know, my girlfriend's time, my daughter's mom, like I would come home and I'd be like, oh, I hate this. Like, I hate working for them. And I knew that I hated kind of doing the work per se, but I liked the end result. So I was like, well, how else can I get to this? And when I started to learn how to like manage my own projects, I didn't really have a blueprint for it. So it was just kind of like finding my way. But the reason why I chose the work is because I didn't really know another option. And I've always been like the more of a hands-on kind of person, you know, than like, you know, trying to figure it out a different kind of way. I just like to get on, get my hands dirty, and you know, that's been the benefit, and that's sometimes to my detriment as well.
Yeah. When you say to your detriment, how has that, I guess, come out throughout your real estate journey?
I would say because like at some point in time, you need to kind of like step back in order to scale. Like you have to go from like the person who's trying to do to more like the person who's trying to manage things. And, you know, it's kind of like my friend who I mentioned who first got me involved. He knows how to physically do the work and he knows how to do a little bit of everything. So it's hard for him to relinquish doing everything and give it to someone else so that he can do something different. You know, so whereas though I want to do a few projects at a time managing them, right? He will do one hands on. And so I think that it comes to you to my detriment because my love and enjoyment of being physically at projects, managing them, you know, has stopped me probably from scaling up my business at the rate in which I should, you know? So when I hear you talk about like managing out of state, I'm like, hold on, you know, because I haven't gotten to that point. I still like micromanage to a great degree. And it's something that I struggle with letting go. You know, it's like, when I first started doing this, like 2009 or so, I really enjoyed that part of it. But now, you know, fast forward, what's this, 11, 12 years later, I don't necessarily get the same fulfillment out of managing projects that I did back then. So it's time to kind of like take a step back and let somebody else do that stuff and, you know, kind of manage the person who's managing. And so that's what I mean by that.
Love it. And I mean, I like that because it's honest, right? It's honest. It's transparent. And at least you're aware of it. I think it'd be worse if you were completely oblivious or in denial.
I'm going to be transparent because I feel like for me, accountability is like step one, right? Because it's like until we accept accountability for something, we can't like figure out like why we should do it different or how we could have done it different to get a different outcome. It's like, if I'm like, well, everything's perfect, you know, then nothing good comes from that. Like my best experience comes from the things that I could have done different, you know? So, I want to share those things because those are the things that somebody else will benefit from most, not just like everything that went perfect that, you know, I tell or what have you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you mentioned, you know, you started as a day laborer, just helping your friend out at the projects and so forth. And then you realize, you know what? I don't really like this part of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, What happened after that? Like, how did you figure out what your next adventure was going to be?
Oh, I messed up like right out the gate.
Tell
so
us about it.
It was the greatest gift that could have happened to me at that point in the business. So I worked with them through a whole project. I quit. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I went off, I bought a truck, right? I started doing small hauling. Like I was at Morgan at the time in college. So like in between classes, I'm like, I'll run trash. So I printed out these flyers and I would put them in like people's whatever, like go to Home Depot, just put them. And I was doing like trash for a while. And then that same friend came to me and he's like, look, I got an opportunity to buy a house. We can do it together. I'll put up half the money. You put up half the money. I'll do the work. We split the profits, right? I'm like, cool, $5,000 house. I'm like, it's fine. Can't beat it. So we buy this house. I don't know what month it was, but let's just say we buy this house in like July, right? July goes by. August goes by. September goes by. I'm mad. I'm like, nothing's going on in this house. And so I'm complaining to another friend of ours. Oh, man, he ain't doing no work. Nothing's happening. Da, da, da. He's like, oh, I know this guy to do work, right? I'm like, oh, you do? He's like, yeah, I know this guy, man. He does all this work. So lesson number one I learned, like when I take referrals, I try to take them down from people who have knowledge, even specifically about a field if possible. Like if I'm looking for a plumber, I want somebody who knows about plumbing to tell me who a plumber is they referred. But at this time, I had no idea. You know, he's like, this guy's a contractor. So I'm like, cool. I go and I meet up with this guy and I'm so eager. He could probably like smell it off, coming off of me. And he's like, yeah, I did this house over here, this house over here, this house over here, but they're on the market. You can't get in them, but just look through the window. I'm so naive. And I just want to like, I'm just so frustrated and want to get a job. I'm like, okay, cool. I go, I look through the window. They like houses that are on the market. I'm like, cool. So I take him to look at the job. He gives me a price. And I'm like, all right, I don't know what he told me, but I give him $5,000 to get going, right? So I don't know. I didn't know anything about like having a scope of work, having any kind of like, I didn't know the process of things. But the thing was, is that by me going through one renovation with them, I was like ridiculously confident in my ability to do a house just from like sweeping floors and moving drywall. Like yeah. I just thought because I saw it that I then could duplicate it. And I was wrong. So I gave him $5,000. And like he would do random things like put in a kitchen cabinet, a window, hang one door. It was just miscellaneous things. And then he came back to me and he was like, I get another $5,000, whatever. And I was like, sounds about right. Give him another $5,000.
Yeah.
I give him another $5,000. And same things are going on. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. My friend comes to the job. Finally, I don't know how long, but we had already put out $10,000. He stops by one day. He realized I have no clue what I'm doing. He kicks the dude off the job, kicks me off the job, and we just shut the house down. And it sat like that probably for 2 or 3 years. Wow. And then eventually somebody came by and they wanted to buy the house and we sold it to them. And we still lost some money, but it was a learning lesson, man. Like that was the best thing that could have happened to me right then and there, because it was like the deal was $5,000. We put $10,000 in, you know, so we it was just our own money. And so we lost. But one, I felt horrible because I lost my friend's money more than my own money. You know, two, it taught me that I didn't know anything. And that I really needed to like learn. And three, I was just most fortunate because like sometimes people jump into large deals and get taken advantage of and they never get a second opportunity, you know? So I was able to take some time, regroup, figure it all out again, and then jump back into the next project with the experience that, you know, I paid for on the first one. So that was my first experience.
Definitely, definitely. And how do you bounce back from that? Because, you know, you mentioned, you know, this guy got $10,000. You both were all in $10,000 or so, and it sat for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would probably have that moment and say, you know what? I don't think real estate is for me. Maybe I should do something else. Maybe I should try some other venture. But why did you decide to go on and try again? you know, when you could have just quit and nobody probably would have blamed you?
That's a great question. I wanted to try again anyway, but what really pushed me was a circumstance, I believe, I'd say. That, you know, I already kind of knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I was going to school because I was like at that point in life where, you know, you're 17, 18, it's like go left, go right. And I was like, let me just go here to kind of figure life out. But like when I was in college, I was already like trying to lean towards becoming an entrepreneur, but I also went to school for finance and I was like, I want to work on like Wall Street. And what happened was my daughter was born in July 2007. I don't know how long I was in college, 6 years, I think, right? I was finally graduating in that June and I had a job at T. Rowe Price and it started like July, maybe like the 10th or something. And I was like, my wife is pregnant and my first child is being born. Like, I want to be able to spend some time with her, but I'll be like going through a training at that point in time. And they were like, well, we could give you the day that she's born and the next day, and then you have to come back to work. And I was like, man, like, I just want to spend some time with my daughter. You know, I mean, I didn't expect like maternity leave, but I expected to be like a week or two. And then I talked it over with her and I was like, you know, I'm making pretty good money. You know, I felt like I was just graduating. Like, I could always maybe go back to it if I wanted to. But you know, it was the main thing. Like, if had my daughter been born a different time, I would have taken a job when I came out of college and maybe I would have went a different path if it felt like that was for me. But at that particular point in time, her being born and being able to spend time with her was more important than anything. You know, and a friend of mine, him and I had started a home improvement business when we was like 17, 18. And he had a license and we would sell jobs to like residential, like homeowners. And his stepfather like had some experience selling home improvements. So he was like a salesman. And that was like my first business. So I kind of always like being an entrepreneur, but I also like learning about finance. And I did want to work like Wall Street kind of thing. But because of my daughter being born when she was, the cards just didn't align. And once I kind of got going, I just, you know, ended up sticking with, even through the recession part of it, which was probably the more difficult. That was like the true test, you know, because I bought a house in 2009 and I fixed it up, sold it. That one went well. That was my second one. I did a lot better. Hired good contractors. I spent a lot of time on the jobs. You know, my contractor did really good and he was fast. And, you know, we could talk about it more, but it helped me like build relationships with like my hard money lender that I had borrowed from at that time. And then him and I started doing some things together through that. And then, you know, the recession and things slowed down and, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Got you. So hard money lenders, you know, mm-hmm. they get a bad rep. You know, there's a lot of different opinions out there. I guess that's the diplomatic way to say it. Can you talk a bit more about hard money lenders? Because it sounds like you started using them way back. Could you break down just, you know, how you got in, mm-hmm. How you heard about it, how you got to work with them?
Mm-hmm. All right. So how I heard about hard money, I don't recall exactly like the first time I heard the term, mm-hmm. but I know that someone told me about hard money. And it probably was my friend who I started doing work with, because his partner was buying investment properties at the time and he was using a hard money lender. So I assume that he's probably the one that told me about that, because I really didn't know a lot of people in real estate. But you know, it was like my first few hard money calls, like people didn't really want to work. I didn't have any experience, you know, at that time. I only had the one property that didn't go good, which obviously nobody wants to lend to me based on that. So I didn't have any track record of doing successful deals. So that was probably one of the more difficult times to borrow. And like, well, what happened is I would call one hard money lender and they'd be like, nah, no, whatever. I'd be like, well, can you refer me somebody else? And they would give me somebody else. And they'd be like, nah. And then they would give me somebody else. And I think maybe after like four or five, like, no, thank you. A guy was like, I'll give you a chance. He's like, oh, you seem young. You seem like you. At the time, I think I may have been in college or like I had just finished up because that was like 2009. And he was just like, I'll give you a chance. And so him and I, he was like really good, right? So I'll say this about hard money lenders. A lot of people don't like hard money lenders. I get it. It's because of the interest, right? But at the same time, it's like, I understand risk and return, so because I'm risky, especially coming into the game, I should pay more somebody should be compensated more for the risk that I present. You know what I mean? And that's just the long and the short of it. So it's like, I tell people the goal is to build a track record. Every house is a project completed. Every house goes towards your track record. It's almost like credit, so it's like you do this house and it goes well. It's good. It goes towards like your credit being good. So the more houses you do and the more you prove you can do it, then typically the cheaper money gets. And eventually you're seen as just being as risky as the market itself is, and so you're able to shop for, people that are looking to invest money where the rate of return may be less because you yourself are less risky, and another thing I would say about hard money lenders. This is very, very important. This is probably the most important thing I can say about hard money lenders. I, by chance, more than design, align myself with hard money lenders who all, except one, well, even this guy was an investor, right? So when you're looking for hard money, they're not just shopping me after maybe my first deal or two, because I've proven that I can take a house and take it from this point to this point and sell it or do whatever I'm going to do with it. So I'm not as risky as I am when I'm just saying I have an idea and I think I can do it, So at that point, I would suggest that people begin to look for hard money lenders that they can form relationships with or people that have been in the business before. So, like three of my best mentors are hard money lenders. I mean, one did new construction for like 20 years. Wow. One is taught me everything I know pretty much about rental properties. And another guy is just like a guy who I call and get advice from. He's been in rentals for a while. He's done notes. He's done this. He's done that. And it's like what you find out is that these people that are older who have spent time in real estate still have a passion for real estate, but they don't necessarily want to do it at that level. It's kind of like me saying how I need to move from one to the next. It's like he's done rentals since the 80s. Wow. I mean, and he'll still like do them and partner with me on them, but he doesn't necessarily want to be getting calls about toilets, but he loves it enough where he'll sit down and talk to me for hours about it. I call him anytime I want. So it's like, yeah, I borrow money from him and he charges me for that. But in exchange for that, I'm able to form a relationship and I'm able to, leverage that relationship in different ways. So I think that, when people say that, they're only looking at one side of it, it's the money. But on the other side of it, it's the relationship. So instead of just finding a hard money lender that you can borrow money from, find one that you also can form a relationship so that you're paying money, but you're getting something in return too.
Definitely. So a hard money lender helped you to complete your first successful deal. Mm-hmm. How did that feel? You finally got it. How did you feel after that?
Oh man, I felt great. It felt good to, to have one project go bad, mm-hmm. and then, make some adjustments and come back and have one go really, really good. Like I was in and out, everything went well. And it felt good, obviously to get to the closing table. And that was in 2009. I was kind of oblivious to the market and all of that stuff there, but I got out at the perfect time. So I was very fortunate for it to not go, in a different direction. Now I'm a lot more aware of, and I think a lot more about the timing of the market and where the market is in a cycle and all of those things. But back then I was trying to get a house to do. I wasn't thinking about any of that stuff.
Definitely. What was the real estate landscape like in Baltimore back then, especially, during the 2009 years and 2010 and stuff? What was it like back then?
So I can't say that I was in it enough to really remember how the market was, because I only did that one house.
Yeah.
Right. I made money and I messed the money up. Like I don't, I just, I don't know. I was still very young. So I made money, and then I just kind of spent it on, I don't know what. And then like the recession really like set in. And at the same time, I still was doing like my demolition hauling business. And then that slowed because I was doing stuff for like residential contractors. So that really slowed down. But like, as far as like Baltimore as a whole in the real estate market, I don't really know. Like, I don't know what it was outside of like my contractors that were doing work. You know, I know right. when it slowed down, but I mean, that was everywhere. It just wasn't Baltimore. It was, you know, just recession period.
Definitely. So, you know, the recession comes, your hauling and demo business slows down. Mm-hmm. What happened over the next couple of years? Like, when did things start to turn and start to look up?
It took a few years. Like, so when the recession started, or when it hit me finally, it was a weird time because like me and my wife at the time were like going, we went through a divorce, right? My daughter's mom. And I didn't have anything. Like, I literally remember when me and her were going through like our like initial breakup, right? One night I was like, well, let's just go sit down and talk and eat. And we went to this Applebee's, like not far from where we live. And I literally had to be like, can you pay for dinner? Like, I had no money, you know? So I was staying at my friend's house on his couch. And I'll never forget, like, my aunt, right? Like, she's like everything for me. Like, she is somebody who believed in me. Like, you know how they say like a coach should believe in their students more than a student believes in themselves. Like, that's my aunt. Like, she was my first coach. Like, she believed, like, I remember she told me, I'll never forget. She was like, she hadn't quite retired yet. She was like, you need to stick with it. Because I was talking about getting a job. And she was like, you need to stick with it. She was like, because I've worked for my whole life at a job I didn't like. She was like, and I can just tell how much you enjoy what you do. She was like, you need to just do whatever you need to do, fight through it. I'll help you however I can. And she was like, you'll be all right. And at the time, I didn't feel that way. I mean, I'm going through a divorce. I'm living on my friend's couch. I have nothing. Like, I can't even buy food, you know, and I just couldn't see the other side of it. But I just kind of like, I just stuck in there and like slowly like things started to pick back up just enough where I get like a one bedroom apartment. I get a one bedroom apartment, you know, at least like something my daughter has somewhere to stay. I just kind of like work out of it. And then what kind of really turned things around is when I did the one house in 2009, I met a realtor who was selling the property like, I don't know, 10 doors down or something. And I'm like, I didn't have a realtor. I didn't know anything about real estate. So I talked to him like, hey, can you come look at this house? And he's like, yeah, he comes, looks at it. And I end up letting him list it. He calls me like, I think it's 2013. And he's like, hey, I got this house. It's downtown. I was like, man, I don't think I'm ready to work downtown, man. Like, these are nicer houses. I never worked down there. And I was just like, I don't think I'm ready. I'd only done one house. And he's like, man, I believe in you. Like, I saw the work you did. I know if you do that house, this house, like you did that one, it'll sell. And I'm like, well, I don't have any money.
Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, what's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 3 times a month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to gumroad.com/bread. That's gumroad.com/BRED. It's the Real Estate Investing Community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
He's like, man, I'll get the money together for you. He was like, you manage the project. I'll get the money together for you. And you know, you'll take half the profit and they'll take half the profit. And I'm just like, so I just show up, I put the house together and we're going to split the money. And he's like, yeah. And that was like a moment where I'm like, wow, knowing how to manage these projects and take them from beginning to end is a valuable skill to have. And from there, I just leveraged that. You know what I mean? Like I leveraged that to just like get back without having money.
Wow.
And yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, I think it says a lot about the quality of work that you did in that house, like 4 years prior, you know, for the realtor to remember you and think of you when the opportunity came up. I think that says a lot. And clearly you left an impression on that realtor. If they could just call you out of the blue after like 4 years.
Years later. And, you know, it was years later.
Get you back and, you know, get the money together. And I mean, it says a lot, you know, it says a lot. And, you know, I'm sure you're thankful for that.
Oh, man, it was really like life changing. You know what I mean? It was because like I said, I didn't know much about the business. I didn't know a ton about financing. My hard money lender that had lended me the money originally on the first property, him and I had tried to do like a property or two together that he had like taken back from people as the recession started, but it just really didn't work out. And I ended up doing the houses and, you know, like trying to fix them up, but we like never made money from that part of it. And it really, but for some, that moment was just the one where I'm like, oh, like you can, you know, I can do this way. And I just did that. I did that until like I was able to start doing some things on my own until the next opportunity presented itself, which was good because the projects that I was able to do like that are the projects that when the next opportunity came along, I was able to say, well, I did this and this. So by that time, it wasn't just like, oh, well, I did one house. You know, it was like, well, I did 2, 3, 4, 5 houses, you know? And so, like I said, it's just always about just building your track record. Like you may not get 100% of the profit on every deal, but that's okay. Like it's not a sprint, you know, it takes time to do this.
Definitely. And one thing you mentioned, I want to touch on a little bit, that you may not take all the profits on every project. However, if you look at where you were at that point, you know, it's 2013, you're really kind of down, right? And you get that call. Imagine if you said, you know what? Oh, nah, I'm not splitting with nobody. You know, I want to do something with all the profits. You probably might still be down, right? So, can you talk about just the benefits of partnerships and also the benefits of having a piece of a larger pie, right? Yeah. You know, it's better to have part of that, I think, than to have all of nothing.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, you know, I think that for whatever reason, a lot of times people feel like you need all of everything. But what I've noticed is that most deals, especially as they get bigger and bigger, it's usually always multiple people, you know? And the thing is like, you have this person over here, they have a need. You have this person over here, they have a need. I think that as long as those needs can be, you know, like they overlap and everybody is getting a benefit from it, then, you know, it's nothing wrong with it, you know? So for this person who's putting up the money, you know, they may have had a job or may not have the time or the desire to do it, but they're looking for a way to get an above average return on their money. Me, I don't have any money. You know, I have a skill and, you know, this person, they could very well feel the same way. They could be like, hey, you know what? Well, I don't want to pay a contractor because that's essentially the role I'm playing. 50% of the money when I could hire this contractor and just pay him for doing the work. But me here, I alleviate that headache. So it's like whatever you're doing over here, you're able to continue to do. Like sometimes I have partners, they never even been to a project. You know, they don't even know what the house looks like. So it's like that's a benefit to them. It's like they're able to use their money and have it work for them. And I don't have any money at the time. So it's like I'm able to use my time and trade it, you know, with their money and it all makes sense. So especially when people are getting going, I think that you should just be open to giving up a little bit more for what you don't have. Like a friend and I were talking the other day, and he was helping some people from like a consultant role. And, you know, they decided to bring him in, you know, for like a part of it more as like a partnership. But I'm like, yo, it makes perfect sense, because when you're a partner, you have a vested interest beyond just like somebody paying you to consult on a project. So it's beautiful for them, because if they're not here and you're here and you're consulting, it's of no benefit to you either way, you know. But if you're a vested partner, then you want to see it through to completion. You want to make sure it's functioning properly. So it's like they're giving up something, but in return, they're getting something just as great, you know. So it works. And partnerships like that, especially like in real estate, like 50-50 for me have taken me a long way. And, you know, it's opened up a lot of doors. And I mean, I've had times I'm like, oh, this partner doesn't do anything, you know. But what I would say is that I prefer a partner who doesn't do anything, because I don't want, like, I've turned people down who like, well, I think you could save money here if you did this, if you, you know, just like, let me manage the project. You go do whatever it is you're doing and feel free to stop by. You got the lockbox code and all of that. But like, two people trying to do the same thing just doesn't work. Like, let me handle what I'm good at. You handle what you're good at. And I don't feel any kind of way if you don't come to the house. I don't need you there every day. You don't have to, you know, like, your value to me is not you coming there and doing what I'm already doing. Your value to me is what you've already done. Just put up the money for the house, make the payments, or however we're doing it, and make sure that stuff happens, and I'll do the rest, and we're good, you know? And that's mutually beneficial.
All right. Love it. Love it. So after you got, you know, restarted and, you know, got your first couple deals done and flips and so forth, like, what happened from there? Like, did you start hitting your stride after a while? Like, how did things progress?
So next moment that changed me, I think maybe about 2000, I want to say 16 or so, I'm having random conversations. So it's like this little, I had joined my neighborhood association, right? Well, I don't even know if I had joined at that point in time, but it's like this little neighborhood club kind of thing, mm-hmm. where like a lot of the older guys go and sit. And I had made friends with this one guy, and he's like the guy who just knows everybody. You know, like one of those kind of people. And I came across this idea of private money, right? And I had been trying through, like, I brought software and everything. I'm sending out letters like, hey, you want to lend me some money? And I've tried all these different ways to find money, because I'm like, all right, all these deals I'm doing are 50-50. I knew about hard money, but once I started learning about private money, I was like, this is it. I said, I'm trying. And, you know, it's hard. Like, people, I don't know. Some people make private money sound. It was hard for me. Let me say it that way. Private money was hard for me to find. It took me some time to find. You know, some people find it right away or know somebody. For me, it was difficult. So I was like sending out letters and doing all this stuff. And I'm talking to this guy, and I was like, man, I need to learn how to raise money. And I was like, I need to find some money for like real estate deals. I'm looking for like private investors. We have this conversation. I think nothing more of it, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe a few months later, a guy that he owned a real estate brokerage in the area I'm working in. Mm-hmm. He calls me and he's like, yeah, you know, this guy told me that you were looking for private money. And this guy told me you're looking for a lender. And I was like, yeah. He was like, well, I got this guy. He doesn't really lend a lot, but he's like an older guy. He's been in the business. He made a lot of money, and he's specifically looking for somebody who's younger that he can like help him mentor, is what he told me. So I'm like, all right, me and the guy meet, we have coffee, talk. And I only had one house going at the time. So at this time I'm just doing like one house. I'm normally doing one. I fix it up. I sell it. I find another one, you know, so I'm just doing one, still doing like my trash hauling and stuff like that. So I take the guy to the house. He's like, oh, it looks nice or whatever. He's like, you got any more deals in the pipeline? I'm like, no, whatever. He's like, well, let me know if you find something. I'm like, cool. So I find something in the neighborhood, whatever, and I call him. Hey, I found this house. He's like, how much is it? I think I paid like, I don't know, it was good. I paid like $90,000 or something like that. And he's like, all right, and how much to renovate it? And I forget what it was, maybe $100,000 or so. And he's like, all right, well, send me over, you know, the contract or whatever, and I'll provide the financing. So I'm like, all right. So I'm thinking, like, I'm going to pay points, closing costs, all that stuff. So like a week before settlement, I'm like, well, all right, well, you know, tell me the terms, like what I need to pay. He's like, I'll just show up and sign the paperwork. And I was like, show up and sign the paperwork. And I went and then signed the paperwork. He was like, just use your money to start doing the work. He's like, give me your draw schedule. Use your money to start doing the work. I did it. House went good. I sold it. And I was like, so I was only doing one at a time. He's like, all right, that went good. He's like, so now he's like, you can buy four. He's like, you can go up to four. He's like, I'll finance up to four.
At one time?
Yeah. Then I started doing them and then I got up to like seven or eight at a time. And that was like my first, I was like, this is private money. And I didn't know going into it, but I had been, cause I'm like, I've been looking for this for like, I don't know how long, but long enough to like buy a course and be sending out letters and all this stuff. Like, and it just came to me through a relationship. And it was odd. And him and I still do stuff together. Like, he just funded a deal for me the other day. And him and I bought rentals together and all kinds of stuff. But it all started just from me having a conversation with the guy and him going and asking him, like, you know, anybody who will lend him money.
It's crazy. Wow, that's incredible. How would you compare hard money to private money?
I mean, similar in ways, you know. I mean, the thing I would say the biggest difference between private money and hard money is private money is negotiable, right? Like, and when I say private money in this instance, I'm not talking about like, I mean, because it could be described in a few ways. So this guy in particular is like lending me for the entire transaction. He's lending my purchase and renovation. I'm not talking about like if I borrow, you know, $30,000 from this person, like raising a bunch of money and putting it together. I'm just talking about for like a specific deal. So in a specific deal, I think one of the biggest differences is just the ability to negotiate the terms, right? So like my lender still charges me, I don't know, 12 and three. Which is about what I was paying for hard money. Well, he was charging 12 and two on this latest deal. He charged me 12 and three.
When you say 12 and three, what do you mean?
12% interest per year. Uh-huh. And two or three is the point. So a point is, you know, 1% of the loan. So if I borrow $100,000 and it's 1 point, it's $1,000. You know, if it's 2 points, if I borrow $100,000, it's $2,000. So he charges me. It was 12 and two. He went to 12 and three. But again, like, so the way that the payments are structured have changed, right? So a lot of times when you borrow hard money, let's just say, I just like using round numbers. So I'm not like a mathematician. So let's just say if my purchase is 100, right? And my renovation is 50. So it's 150 total. And I'm paying 12%, right? If you're paying 12%, then that's 1% of the total of the loan. So 150, I'd be paying $1,500 a month, right? Typically. But the way that he changed it now is I pay interest on the money borrowed. So let's just say if I borrow $100,000 and for the purchase and then 50 for the renovation, and let's just say instead of, you know, let's say I use $20,000 on my renovation. So month one, instead of paying $1,500, I'm at $120 total. I'll pay $1,200, you know, so it saves you money on that end, but he went up a point. So I'm still seeing if it kind of washes out or if it works, but that's important as hard money lenders too, like their terms, you know? So, you know, with hard money, it's same thing, points, interest, it's the way you pay it back, that kind of stuff. Just the terms of it. You know, a lot of hard money lenders after 6 months or 9 months, they may add a point on to the loan or they may change the interest rate. Like one of my guys, he used to do 9 months. Now at 6 months, he charges more. I'm like, okay, 6 months, I'm probably not going to have this house sold. So I need to be prepared to pay additional interest. You know, hard money lenders tend to just be a little more stringent with their terms. And it's just like, this is what it is. So say one of the biggest things that was a game changer between private money and hard money, or not one of the biggest thing. And in relation to the terms is that, like, my private lender, I don't pay monthly mortgage. I only pay when the property sells. So it allows me to do more properties. You know, if let's say if I have $50,000 to do deals with, instead of me paying, you know, in that scenario, $1,500 a month for interest in the mortgage, that $1,500 is being rolled off to my sale or my settlement. So then I can take that same money and leverage it into more properties. So that was the main thing, because I was doing a lot of houses that were like $300,000 price point. So it's like if I got, you know, four $300,000 houses, I'm paying $12,000 a month just in interest. I mean, just in monthly interest payments. But instead, now I'm doing four houses and all of that money is accruing on the back end. I mean, it's still money, but it's like it's not coming out of my pocket on the front end, and it's allowed me to do more.
Definitely. Can you talk about the discipline that it takes to use, whether it's hard money or private money, like the discipline that it takes to manage it properly and complete the project? Because I think, you know, one thing people will get from this episode is, like, you know, tips for using hard money lenders, tips for using private lenders. However, I really want to talk about as well, like, you know, these people are trusting you with their money. So you got to know what you're doing with it. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community.
I'm back.
No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, what's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 3 times a month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to gumroad.com/bread. That's gumroad.com/BRED. It's the Real Estate Investing Community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
So from the financial aspect or from like the work aspect?
I'll say both.
All right. So from the financial aspect, and this is something that my lender now still gets on me about, because I'll be the first to admit, like, I had to learn to like give things away. Like I said, right? I would go to work all day, come home, and like I got my receipts out, like trying to mark, and I was horrible at it. I was a terrible bookkeeper, you know. And he would tell me over and over, he'd be like, Alex, if you don't know how much money you spent, you don't know how much money you made, you know. And he would just tell me, like, don't think just because you go to settlement and you get a check, that's what you made. He's like, you need to know what you spent, because you know, you could have a rehab budget of $40,000, you might spend $50,000. You know, things happen. And if you're not accounting for that properly, you really don't know what you spent. So you feel like you made the money, but you don't really know. Like, it took me, I just hired a bookkeeper, maybe. So my friend did it for like two, I would say maybe like within the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Before that, I was just kind of like loosey-goosey, you know. So I would get the projects finished. So it wasn't that I was doing something necessarily with his money that I shouldn't, but it was just that I really didn't have an understanding of my business. You know, I really didn't have understanding if a deal was profitable or not, because I was really just kind of guesstimating. Like, I would just look at whatever check I get at settlement as the money I made, when, you know, a lot of times that's not really the case. You know, like if your rehab budget is pretty tight, I mean, you may go over, you know, sometimes it's a little bit, sometimes it's more, sometimes you may be a little under, but I just didn't really know. So I think that the main thing is like, if you don't do anything else, if you're not good with like keeping track of your numbers, and that's just, like, I've seen people even have, like, one guy I know, I was like, man, this dude is crazy. But it probably worked better in my system, which was no system. You know, his system was every house, he would have a bank account and he would just run a house from a bank account. And if he's doing 10 houses, you have 10 bank accounts and you have 10 cards for him, and he would just run it like that. And it was better than what I was doing, because I would run 5-6 houses at a time and I'm doing it from the same account, and I go to settlement and I'm like, oh, I made this, but really I wasn't like on top of it. So I think that that's the main thing financially. Like, the way the draw schedules are set up, I mean, with private money, like, yeah, you can mess up somebody's money. But even like my private money lender, him and I traditionally work like you would with a hard money lender. Like I say, here's my scope of work. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Like drawer one will be this, drawer two will be that, drawer three will be that, you know, four and so on and so on. And then I use my money to get going. And then he comes and reimburses me. So in the event that I do something wrong on this side, the work is not going to get done and he's not going to give me his money because my work ain't done. And, you know, so he's never really out ahead of me because he's giving me money to reimburse me for what I spent and not like, you know, what I'm going to spend. So that's that side of it. And from, you know, from the work side of it. So ask me the question for the work side.
Yeah. So when you're managing the projects and, you know, whether you're doing some of the work or whether, you know, you got subcontractors doing the work, are you thinking about that in the back of your head? It's like, look, we got this money on the line. We need to get this stuff done in a timely fashion. Like, is that something that goes through your mind or are you just working and just getting the job done and making the house beautiful?
No, I'm always thinking about it. So I don't do the work anymore, right? Well, yeah. I never really did the work. I was a helper. I was a day laborer. I never got any further than that in the work side of it. But I mean, I'm always thinking about it. And, you know, the thing is, I think that like our experiences like shape kind of like who we are. So because I started at this time where like I felt like it was a rough time and time kind of ran out on me. And then like it turned my life upside down completely. I'm always cognizant of that. Like, especially like now, like I'm telling you, like I bought a house last week and I sat on the house for like a few days and I was like, I should just sell this house. I was like, man, I don't know what's going on with the market. The interest rates are going up. And I'm like thinking like, all right, so if I go in there and I do this, I got this amount of time, you know, and I plan for there to be a reduction in price. Like if prices go down by 5%, I'll still make pretty good money. Like I plan for that because of the way I feel like we are in the market. So I do. And another thing, I had the most random occurrence, but I'm going to share my losses because, you know, yeah. I just feel like it's beneficial. I don't know. And you know, you don't really get to talk a lot of times about the things that went bad. Cause I don't want people like, man, this dude is like a Debbie Downer. Like, I don't even want to follow this guy no more. But, 2019, right? I'll never forget it. I had like, I want to say I had seven houses going, two of which most expensive house I've ever bought. Market was good. I was like, this is it. I said, I was like marketing. I had all of them same neighborhood. I'm rolling. But keep in mind, like one thing I will say is that as you start to scale your bit, like I went from doing one house to doing like four. And then I tried to jump right in and just keep buying more and more. So then I get up to like seven, two of which are huge houses for me, right? And what happened is that I just wasn't really equipped financially or, you know, with the amount of people that are required to take on so much at one time. So what starts to happen is you buy these houses that are taking you 3 months and now they're taking you 6 and 9 and 12 months. So it's like, because I'm not, the downside of me not paying every month is that I'm not thinking about it the same way. Like mentally, it's not like every month I'm paying for seven houses. So it's like, instead of me getting a house in and out of house in 3 or 4 months, it's taking me 6 months. Then I buy more houses, I had some of them for a year. Wow. So in the course of that time, the market as a whole didn't change. And it's the first time I've seen this, the market in my area changed. So like in the surrounding county, market was good. And in the city, it was the summertime. I'll never forget it. Crime was out of control and people stopped buying in the city. All of my houses that I had took like 10% hits.
Wow.
I mean, it was like, it was a couple $100,000. It was, the bleeding was so bad that my lender just like, on some of them was just like, man, I'll work out something with you. Like it was just so random because the market itself was still good, but because crime had gotten bad, and those are like variables you don't account for, right?
Yeah.
So it's like crime had gotten so bad that people just stopped buying in the city. You know, so now I try to think like, all right, I'm buying this house based on the ARV. The ARV is today. You know what I mean? It's not 6 months from now. It's not a year from now. I'm buying based on where the market is today. And you can bank on appreciation 6 months from now. But like in a market like this, I mean, I don't think that in 6 months prices are going to be higher than they are today. You know, so now I had a house I sold in August. If I would have sold a house in March, I would have made probably another 50, 60,000. It's crazy how from August to March, the price changed so much. But it's like, I can't buy based on that, right? So it's like you have to buy with the anticipation of selling it at today's price. And the longer you take to do a house and sell it, the less likely that is, you know, for a multitude of factors. Like I never thought that crime would destroy a market, but it did at that particular time. And it came back eventually, but these weren't houses that I could just sit on as rentals. Like I had to sell them. He was like, just sell them for whatever you can, you know? And I had to do it. And it hurt bad. But it taught me that like more isn't always better. You know, people just think like, oh, I just want more and more and more and more. And a lot comes with more. Like I wasn't equipped for the growth that I took on. You know, I took it on in anticipation that the market would be good and good. And then it changed. And, you know, I wasn't equipped for it. So, yeah.
Definitely. Now, appreciate story for that. Appreciate you sharing that. So it sounds like you definitely found your groove and flipping and flipped the number of houses over the years. Did you get into any other aspects of real estate, like rentals or wholesaling or anything else? Yeah. Or did you kind of focus in on, or have you just focused in mostly on flipping?
So mainly on flipping, I started buying rentals a few years ago, right? So I always was like, I don't really like rentals. I look at it different now. If I could go back and talk to young me starting, I would start buying rentals early. I probably would have just mixed it up a little more because I still like flipping. I still like, you know, to make like nicer houses, you know, from my perspective. But I would probably do maybe 3-1 or something like that, or, you know, 4-1, like every 4 flips, maybe buy a rental or something like that. But I told myself, like, I'll wait till 35, right? Like, I'll wait till 35, I'll just deal with land. And again, I was just a product of what I had been led to believe. Like up until that point, I had only known landlords who hate their tenants. I mean, this is what I knew, like, these tenants and da, da, da. And so it was just my perception of being a landlord. Not until I met like the guy who I said was like private money, did I understand it. Like he vacations like 3-4 months out the year, easy, maybe more than that, you know? And I was like, this is the first guy I met who is truly wealthy from rentals. I had never met anybody who had rental properties who didn't hate them. You know, so I was like, man, I'm gonna put these off until I'm 35. And, you know, the thing of it is, like, it's not about my time. It's like now I'm more like, what is the market telling me? So the market is going to tell me when it's time to buy rentals, and the market is going to tell me when it's time to fix and flip. And I just have to follow the market. Like, I want to buy more rentals now. It's hard. The prices are up. So I need to be patient. I'll wait until the next slowdown or whatever. And instead of crying because I can't buy flips, I'll just, you know, redirect my attention towards rental properties and then vice versa, you know, and that's just the way that you have to do it. So, him and I started buying. He's like, Alex, he's like, man, you need to start to buy rentals. He's like, it's not going to pay you much now. He was like, but when you get older, it'll pay off. You know, he was like, I know you like to fix and flip. He was like, but what I'll do is that I'll buy rentals with you. You know, he's like, you find them, you fix them up, you find an area that you like, and I'll buy them with you and we'll build a portfolio. And so we started doing that. And I'm grateful, you know, because he kept drilling to my head like, man, you need to start buying rentals. You need to start buying rentals. And that's what I would say. I would say that I think a mix is good. Flips are good because they bring in, you know, assuming they go well, which obviously from my, you know, I'll say it all don't. And then your rentals are cash flow or just a long-term investment in general, you know, and your passive side of it, because flips are not passive. And it to me now, it's more about that part of it than it is necessarily like any other part of it. It's just, mm-hmm. it's just that I'm getting older. I like spending time with my daughter. You know what I mean? Like I don't need it all. I don't want it all. I just want, you know, what I want for us. And I want to be able to live the way I want to live. But more importantly than that, I just want my time. Like I want my time with her. And so I that's it. I want my time. That's my number one thing, my time.
Love it. Love it. Love it, man. So Alex, I'm just thinking about the beginning of the interview and when we were talking and, you know, you just started out as like a day worker. You just, you know, the real estate is cool. Let me go help out at this project. Then you buy a house and with a friend of yours and doesn't work out, you know, sat on for a couple of years, paid a contractor and it took a couple of years to get back up on your feet within the real estate game. You got a call that changed your life. You had a call that changed your life and you got back into the game and, you know, many houses flipped since then and you got a mentor by your side helping you out and building up a rental portfolio. You know, I just think it's a great story of a comeback, if you will, right? Just thinking about the progress that you've made and where the journey has taken you. So, you know, I think this interview is definitely going to be an inspiration to the audience.
Oh man, thank you. I'm glad, you know. I mean, I think that was one of the main reasons that I reached out to you because, you know, I don't know, like I admire people like you who just jump in and, you know, you are, you know, like you put out information, you put out a podcast, you put out courses, things like that. Like I had one class last May. It was the only one I did, you know, so, I just think that it's important because like when I first started, I didn't know anybody who did this, like all this stuff wasn't available. So I think that it's just important to be able to jump on things here. And, you know, I was like, let me reach out to this guy because he seems like he's just working with people who are, you know, like your audience seems like people who are getting going, which mm-hmm. I identify with the most, you know what I mean? So I was like, let me just ask him if it'll be all right if I come on and share. And I just think that it's important because things like everyday things go wrong. Like everyday things go wrong at my job, you know, my job still. And for people that are getting going, it's just like, as long as you can avoid some of the big mistakes, like some of the things that will completely wipe you out, you know, then I think that you're good. Those are the things that you have to avoid. So it's like, if I can say something here and they're like, well, don't give somebody, you know, $5,000 and not know what their scope, or give them any money and not know what their scope of work is going to be. Or, you know, don't try to scale too quick and buy, you know, 5 houses because now money's available when you don't have the crews to do the work, you know, or don't be totally oblivious to market cycles and just doing whatever it is you feel. You know, like all these things are mistakes that I made that, had I had the knowledge, I could have, you know, probably avoided some of them, maybe not all, but just at least some. I'm trying to get better at this part of it because it's a little more difficult for me to just like do these kind of things. But I had did this class the other day and this guy was like talking about, you know, just like the levels. I don't know how to say it correctly, but pretty much he was just saying like in life, like, you are supposed to do things in a certain order. And the first one is you do the thing, you know, and then you manage the thing. And then it's your job to go back and communicate and tell it to others. So it's like, I've worked, you know, doing the stuff and then I've managed people. So it's like, it's my responsibility to share things with people who may be interested to learn, who, you know, are looking. I mean, like they're genuinely seeking information. And it's like, I have information. I'm like, not that I don't want to share, you know, but just, yeah. So that's all I'm saying.
Definitely. Love it, man. Love it. And can you talk about just any resources, courses, mentorship and stuff that you may have? I think I saw some when I went to your link in your bio. So can you talk more about that? Yeah. And you can have those in the show notes too.
Okay, cool. Again, I wasn't ever really too scared of getting into I guess like reserve when it came to house, I just went for it. But like, when it comes to like teaching and education, I've been, man, like I did a course I started working on this thing back in like 2019. I just never sold it. Like I wrote a whole book, you know, like I was telling you, I'll send you an ebook and I've never sold it, you know? So I do have an ebook. And like I said, I'm going to get better at promoting that kind of stuff and doing it, but you know, I have an ebook. I have a course and I'm a like relaunch. I think like I'm watching how you launching your investing virtual ebook and I'm taking notes. You know, so I think the next month, like I'm gonna really get into it because like the people that I have, like I said, I did a class last year in like May and like I still do calls with them like every 2 weeks, wow. You know, and they're extremely grateful. And I think it's helpful for them. And it's just been us all small group. And we just talk for like an hour or two, like every 2 weeks. And I just think it's, you know, just my responsibility to just try to help more people. So Instagram or like, you know, the link in my bio, I have like a free thing about like how to avoid bad contractors. And they can check that out. And if they feel so inclined, you know, an ebook, and if they want to like join a group, then they can do that as well.
Awesome. Awesome. And can you shout out your Instagram page?
My Instagram is Al Rehabs Houses.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Alex, appreciate you coming on, man. Definitely. Oh, man. You know, I enjoyed this so much and, you know, I love the story and a lot of people can relate to it. A lot of people can relate to it. I think it's important for people to see the full journey, right? We can only post so much on Instagram, but these interviews are great because you're able to get all sides of it, the ups, the downs, right. The lessons. Yeah, and yeah. I think it's really important.
Oh, man. Thank you. Again, I appreciate you having me. I really am grateful. Thank you.
Definitely. No problem. No problem. And thank you everyone to listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. If you haven't already, please do leave us a 5-star rating and review. You will get a shout out if you leave one. So I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's BRED Podcast. Until next time.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.